find your people that you can lean on, people who want you to succeed, and then also be that for other people. And that energy will carry you through the tough times, because there will be tough times. And then also you have those people around you to celebrate you. That gets me fueled to go on and achieve as well.
Good day, and welcome to Dwayne Mars DEI 360 with Joe West. I am Yumika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm, and pleased to introduce our guest, Tariq Gauss, who is based in Amsterdam as Roku's Associate General Counsel for Business and Legal Affairs. Tariq shares some of the challenges of having an international career, finding his place, and making his mark around the world.
Hello, this is Joe West, partner here at Dwayne Morris, member of our management committee, and I have the privilege of serving as the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. This interview is special to me because one of the things that I've done over the course of my career that I've been most proud of is serving as the CEO of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association. I first met Tariq Gauss through MCCA. He is one of those superstar scholars who received a scholarship through MCCA, and he has just gone on to do some amazing things. So I'm really happy that he's joining us. Tariq, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well today. I'm doing well. And thank you for those kind words and kind introduction. I must say that you're also one of those people who, this is very special to me because you're one of these people who have really championed my career and been a great source of support. So I'm happy to be speaking with you today.
Thank you. So let's start where you are right now. You are, for the last 6 years, been working in a leadership position with Roku in the Netherlands. Tell us a little bit about the company, about your role, how you ended up there, and what you do.
Okay, happy to. So I joined Roku. I'm based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. I came to the Netherlands in 2018. Before coming to Roku, I joined a company called Vion, which is a telecom holding company. And my background is corporate securities law and also transactional work. That's really the core of my legal training, although I've gone on to do a range of other things. So I was with Vion for 3 years here in Amsterdam. And in 2021, got an offer from Roku. Initially, the position I applied for was to be based in California. But in the process of interviewing, they realized my skill set matched a lot of what they were looking for their international expansion. And so I was brought on board to help launch their Netherlands-based office in charge of quite a bit of corporate international expansion work.
So something you just said really struck me. You end up with a position totally different from something that you applied for. And the reason that struck me is because a lot of times I talk to people who think that their career path is going to be laid out in kind of a linear fashion, and they don't realize that oftentimes different circumstances will take you in a totally different direction. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. If, you know, my career has been really more of a lattice than a ladder. And I can go back, you know, to when my first professional position was in government before I even thought about becoming a lawyer. And so I graduated from Howard in 98/99. And shortly after, took a position in government at the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative in D.C. Again, I had an interest in economics. I had an interest in international affairs and in policy, and had not even a thought about legal work. And so did that for about 6 years. Started thinking about law school or an MBA, and decided that a law school, a JD might put me on the path to actually working internationally, which was one of my goals. I wanted to be working outside of the country in some form. And so left USTR, went to the Securities and Exchange Commission while I was in law school part-time. And again, not really having a path. I knew I knew what my interest was. I knew I wanted to be doing international work and I wanted to be abroad, and was trying to find means to get me there. So left USTR, went to the Securities and Exchange Commission full time while I went to law school part time, and slowly started getting into corporate legal work. In the back of my mind at that time, in terms of being abroad, Brazil was the love that I had in terms of location. And so I wanted to be in Brazil. So kind of make a long story short, left the SEC, graduated law school, got a law firm job doing securities related work, mainly for mutual funds. No international aspect to it at all. But in my mind, I'm still like, okay, how can I turn this into something that gets me abroad? I had a Brazil calendar on my wall in my office, and folks would come in there and say, why do you have a Brazil calendar on your wall? And why do you have, like, you know, this international stuff, you know, scattered across the office? I was at K&L Gates for a couple of years, did work for them. And then, this is probably 10 years after I finished undergrad at Howard. And then sitting at my desk and got a call from a recruiter, you know, saying, hey, we need a Portuguese speaker. And I happen to have been one because I did an exchange program in Brazil and had studied Portuguese for quite a while. We need someone who's willing to come to São Paulo, work for a firm and learn to be a transactional lawyer on top of being a securities lawyer. And I raised my hand with my wife's permission, of course, and that took me to Brazil. Mm-hmm. So already this cut, you know, again, a lot of it was just kind of focusing on my interest and then also having a bit of luck.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but again, the other thing I'm noticing is that even though you didn't quite know how you would get to one of your long-term goals, you were preparing yourself almost without realizing you were preparing yourself. And that was by soaking up the experiences that you were having at the time, right?
100%. And I'm leaving out some details. You know, I kept my Portuguese up. I was taking lessons. I had quite a few Brazilian friends who I was in regular contact with, so speaking the language. I was actually making contacts within the firm when I was at K&L Gates with attorneys who I didn't work with who were working on Brazil issues. So I was just going after that interest, even though I didn't have an opportunity yet.
And the other thing we do without realizing it, especially at earlier stages in our career, we're sort of auditioning for what's next without realizing that's what's happening, right?
Totally.
And that's such a valuable lesson. All right. Totally. So you ended up in Brazil. Tell us about that experience.
That was a great experience. So I got recruited to what was at that time Sherman and Sterling to do transactional work. Again, and when I say transactional, I mean debt and equity offerings, for Brazilian companies, primarily banks, in the U.S. market and internationally. And I had no skill set for that, even though I was at the SEC as a SEC securities lawyer. I reviewed filings and, you know, for companies that went public. And it was almost a very passive type of legal work, even though very important. When I transitioned to Brazil and started working at Sherman and Sterling, I had to make deals happen. And so I was not only dealing with, I was dealing with securities lawyers at the SEC where I used to work, but also orchestrating the whole deal with banks and accounting with accountants and all that. And so it was a different type of work, and doing about 80% of it in Portuguese. So, you know, that was an amazing 3.5 years, very hardcore work, but very cutting my teeth quite a bit. And gaining a lot of confidence in being a transactional attorney.
Yeah. And so after a time in Brazil, you ended up back in the US, right? Bank of America in Charlotte.
I did. So after 3.5 years, I started looking towards coming back to the US. And in the process of doing it, got an offer to go in-house at Bank of America in Charlotte at B of A's headquarters. And again, another monumental and significant transition for me, because I hadn't worked in-house before. I'd done government, had done law firms at that point. And really that's where I learned how to be an in-house lawyer at really a very steady and, you know, well-staffed institution. And yeah, cut my teeth
and
there.
And I tell people, because I've worked, as you know, in-house and in law firms, it's a totally different environments.
Very different, very different. And, you know, I mean, everything was best of class. When you go to a big institution, there are downsides and upsides, but definitely some of the upsides are that you're working with the best of the best, folks who've been doing it forever in this respective field. And so you learn very quickly what, how things work ideally. So, and I've taken that with me, you know, with every position I've taken after that, because, you know, smaller companies can't quite do it like big companies can, but at least, you know, you have a marker for what, you know, what's the best.
Well, that's so true. And, you know, I worked for 5 years at a Fortune 1. And you talk about very competitive environment, extremely knowledgeable and capable people, and very sophisticated and demanding internal business clients who pretty much know your work as well as you do, if not better.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that gives you, you know, if you can put yourself in those situations and survive and thrive, you can, it's not much, you know, you feel like you can't do. So putting, you know, having gone through the Sherman and Sterling, having done 11 years in government at really, you know, pretty high levels, gone through transitioning from a securities lawyer to a transactional lawyer at Sherman and Sterling, and then doing, you know, spending a couple of years at B of A, I felt like I could do pretty much, I didn't know everything, but I felt I had the confidence to kind of go into any situation and deal with it.
So one other thing we have in common is having both done our undergraduate work at HBCUs and then gone on to other institutions. You were at Georgetown, you were at Johns Hopkins, and at Scythe, I mean, School of Advanced International Studies. My nephew finished from there. It is, I mean, that is the gold standard when it comes to that type of educational experience. Talk a little bit about the foundation that an HBCU gave you, how that served you once you left, and how it continues to serve you to this day.
How much time do you have? I'm a proud Howard graduate. And kind of, I guess at the heart of it, I echo what I just said in terms of what the work experience gave me. Howard gave me the foundation, the two things. It you know, it was a very nurturing environment at Howard. That's one thing. Two, you know, even though it was a big institution, I felt like it felt very small in terms of the one-on-one attention you got and support. So I got a lot of that. And I left feeling like I could do anything, like I could handle any situation. I felt like the world was out there for me to go out and find my place in it. And there was nothing I couldn't do if I really wanted to go after it. Yeah, but that's what I got from Howard.
Well, listen, you are, whenever I think back on the recipients of the LMJ scholarship from the Minority Corporate Counsel Association, you're the first person who comes to mind, because you certainly made all of us proud, and you continue to do so to this day. Let's talk a little bit about your current role, your current position. I think most people probably have an idea about Roku. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'd be naive if I didn't acknowledge that there may be some people listening who don't know much about the company. So talk a little bit about it and about your role and what you do there.
Sure. And if I get too far in the weeds, let me know. Just at a high level, Roku is a streaming platform service. So Roku produces, you know, we have two lines of business at a high level. We have a hardware side of the business, which includes the devices. You know, I think our first product were the devices you plug into your TV, television set at home, to make them a smart TV or make them accessible, are accessible by internet, so that you can stream your streaming services, your Netflix and HBOs and Disney's and all those streaming platforms. You could have access to them on your television set. Now, because so many TVs come as smart TVs, you know, we sell our operating system built into television sets. So, for example, I guess it's pretty analogous to Windows for computers. So we make those TVs smart, and we have that what would be in a stick built into the television set. So that's the hardware side of the business.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Again, so that you know you can access your streaming services, and then the software platform side of the business is where we sell advertising, and that's where we make our money. Basically, we make money. We're an advertising business, a tech advertising business at the heart of it.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Tariq. I suspect there are people who, like myself, worked for a global company. I've spent time overseas, but a lot of people haven't and probably don't really have a sense for what it's like if you're US-based to work in various overseas territories. What are some of the challenges and what are some of the rewards? I know every place is different.
Yeah.
So just at a high level, generally speaking, what in your experience has been some of the biggest challenges and some of the most rewarding experiences you've had?
That's a good question. I'd say on the list of biggest challenges, probably a lot of them are there some personal challenges. If you're from the States and you have a lot of family in the States like I do, you don't see a lot of, you know, your family as often as you ideally would. So that's probably the biggest personal challenge. I think culturally, you have to be someone who enjoys being in different cultural settings, because the way business is done, the way timeliness is measured is different, and the way people react to you and to communication is different. And so you have, those can be challenges for someone who's not, who's not looking for that. But for somebody, you know, like me, I enjoy it. I mean, I've always enjoyed it since I was a kid. It's always been something I sought out, those different cultural environments. So that can be a challenge, or it can be a reward depending on the person. The benefits, you know, I'm here with my family. I've been here for 6.5 years. My wife is, you know, from Japan. My kids have grown up and they've had the privilege of growing up in the U.S., Brazil, and Europe. And that's probably been one of the greatest rewards, watching them grow up in these different spaces, especially as young kids of color. You know, giving them this experience has been really, really rewarding. I couldn't put a price on it. And, sometimes I look at them and wonder what the world is like looking from their eyes out, into looking out and around, because it's so different from my upbringing.
What an amazing gift you're able to give to your kids. And judging from, I mean, you've told me a little bit about your kids. They are going to make an amazing impact on the world too.
Thank you.
Tariq, listen, this is, I do a lot of these interviews, but this one's special, man. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
And I'm so thankful you made time for us. What would be a parting word of advice you would give to younger lawyers or younger professionals just sort of trying to find their mark in the world and in their respective professions? What would you say?
If I had one thing and I didn't touch on it, I'd say build your cheerleading squad. Find those people outside of the technical. I mean, you got to get the technical skills and all that, and we all know that, but find your people that you can lean on, people who want you to succeed, and then also be that for other people. And that energy will carry you through the tough times, because there will be tough times, the challenges. And then also you have those people around you to celebrate you, like, you know, who look out and, you know, every accomplishment that my cheerleading squad, my board of directors, whatever you want to call them, these people who like you, you're included in that, who I know are rooting for me, that carries me, that gives me fuel to go on and achieve as well. And so that's what I'd say. I'd say find those people, gravitate towards them. Sometimes they gravitate towards you, but appreciate them when they do. and really make that effort.
Well, listen, I'm honored that you consider me in that group because, like I said, I'm really proud of you. And you've accomplished some great things, and I can't wait to see what's next for you. So thank you. Thank you, Tariq.
Thank you, Joe.